off class with something a little unconventional. I'm going to wait to blow my nose. We're,
That's unconventional.
No, that's not unconventional. Okay, we're going to start off with a little Beit Midrash learning. So you'll see on the first three pages, sources 1 through first. Did I put them out of order? Look at the numbers on the bottom. Make sure you have them in order. Sources 1 through 10. I have 10 instances in the Torah in which this concept of karet, which Rambam calls the most severe, horrible punishment of all, shows up. So you have here, you can separate over there a little bit. You can move down a seat, and you can sit in groups of two and go through the sources. And we're trying to determine, I don't remember if this is inductive or deductive reasoning, to go from the examples and try to come up with a theory about what karet is all about. What is this punishment? So these are examples of transgressions of Averot, that if a person transgresses them, you'll see, as the Torah says, then that person gets this punishment, whatever it is, of karet. Here she is. Okay, so I'm going to turn off the recorder. General view about what karet is.
Yeah.
Being cut off.
The language is different.
I mean, being shut off.
Okay, so we have here that you're being cut off.
With the karates. The karate. The
no, because you finished with the
spelling.
With a coup.
Because they cut themselves off from a lot of stuff. Even though they still think they're Jewish.
Okay.
Some people still think they're Jewish.
Okay. The truth is, if their mothers are Jewish all the way back, then they're Jewish.
They think they're practicing
Judaism.
Right.
Okay.
And they remove themselves. They live far from the
mountains. So it has nothing to do with it. It's spelled differently, right?
It's spelled differently. It's spelled with a kuf, reish, aleph.
Yeah. There's only about 200 of them left in the whole world.
Okay.
Harriet,
you had a...
I think it seems to be ostracism, a separation, not being among people and being cut off from God, cut off from
everything.
The kin or the community?
The language is
everything.
The language is different depending on the situation, right. but the unifying language among all of them is this concept of karet.
Right.
And I keep using the Hebrew term because we're trying to get to a definition of it. It's always nefesh.
Right.
So does that indicate that this is a spiritual punishment or a physical punishment?
Oh, it's both.
No, I think it's both.
It
has to be both.
You're cut off from the community.
Okay.
Depends. This one is...
Let's use the first example of a person who doesn't... A male who is uncircumcised, a Jewish male, who is uncircumcised and fails to circumcise himself. The punishment for that is karet. So let's say nobody else knows about it. So if we go with this definition of ostracism,
and no one
then
knows,
he's only ostracized from God, and we'll have to define what that means to be ostracized from God, because he's still a living, breathing, thinking human being. Nobody else knows about it, so he isn't necessarily actually ostracized by a community. So let's go from there.
But in his mind, he can't, I mean, other than doing tshuva, there's really nothing he can do.
Well, he could do the bris.
And he chooses not to?
For whatever reason, he chooses not to.
And no one knows. There's nothing he can do, really.
There can't be this.
No one knows.
Can't be a situation where nobody knows.
That could be. He's a very private person. Nobody knows. Never got married. Well, nobody knows. Let's say.
Never.
It could happen.
Swimming.
It could happen. Very private. Changes in the private stalls of the bathroom. Yeah, it definitely could happen.
Yeah.
So now, what is this? Let's take that extreme example.
He's still cut off in his mind.
He knows.
He knows he's cut off. That God's not receiving his prayers. He knows that.
Okay.
That's a psychological thing.
Okay.
And when you psychologically feel separated, like as a shy person, you physically separate yourself.
Okay. Yeah, I just finished reading a book about that in a novel.
If you don't feel part of a group, you tend to draw away physically, too.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure, you don't join in any other activities, etc.
Right.
Okay.
What was the name of the novel?
It's called She's Come Undone. Have you read it?
No.
It was on our reading.
It's a great song.
On our book. Wally Lamb.
Well, you know what? It was
not
on
sure
the
I
was
recommended on the internet.
Does it have a Jewish theme at all?
Briefly, not really.
It was on the book list.
Okay, let's look at source number two. Source number two is talking about anybody who eats what is leavened during Pesach. Anybody who eats chametz during Pesach gets this punishment of karet. How many people do you work with who are Jewish who eat chametz on Pesach? Not on purpose, because I know that the halacha says that
you
I can't
think that nobody in my house.
So none of that has shown up yet. It does show up in one of the later sources, but the intention of the person who's transgressing doesn't play a part yet. We just know, end of story, bottom line, the person is not circumcised, the person eats chametz on Pesach. Okay, source number three. What is the person doing? Not keeping Shabbos. The UPS guy who comes to your door on Shabbos morning, who happens to be Jewish, and asks you to sign and looks at you like you're a moron when you say that you can't. Karet. He has friends. He has a community. He has a family. He has a life. You might even celebrate certain Jewish rituals. You might just not be aware of this concept of Shabbos or think it's only for the ultra-Orthodox.
Can't even ask him to sign for you.
Right. Well, you don't even know that he's Jewish, so you do ask him to sign for you. And
I've
then
never
what's
seen
he doing?
A Jewish UPS guy.
How do you know?
I know what
it's
they
the
look
brown
like.
Shorts.
There's no Jewish man who would be more.
Source number four. Flesh that touches anything unclean shall not be eaten. It shall be consumed in fire. As for other flesh, only he who is clean may eat such flesh. We're talking about a korban here, a sacrifice. But the person who in a state of uncleanliness eats flesh from the Lord's sacrifices of well-being, so it's a certain kind of korban here called a korban shlamim, which they're translating it here. This translation is that it's a sacrifice of well-being from the word shalom. That person shall be cut off from his kin. And you noticed over here that sometimes I can hear in the whole paragraph it keeps saying from his nation. That person will be cut off from his nation. As it did in the first source. The second source about keeping matzah, about not eating chametz, it says may adat Yisrael, which could be maybe because the defining motive of the Jewish people was taking them out of Egypt. You know, it could be. So the mitzvot connected to that, just the concept, a possible concept that we can revisit in source number 10. No, 8, but it doesn't show up there. Okay. So this person gets cut off if a person is unclean, meaning really impure, has a technical status of tamei, of being impure. He cannot eat from this korban. When a person touches anything unclean, be it human uncleanliness or any unclean animal, unclean creature, and eats flesh from the Lord's sacrifice of well-being, that person shall be cut off from his kin. And here we have four times in one paragraph the same concept. And God spoke to Moses, saying, speak to Israelite people, you shouldn't eat any fat of the ox or sheep or the goat, fat from animals that died or were torn by beasts, may be put to any use, but you may not eat it. So making candles would be, you could make candles as long as you don't eat the candles.
And also you could make dog food.
From fat.
From an unclean animal. I mean an unkosher animal.
Possibly, I don't know.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, okay. But with dog food, I think you also have a problem with meat and milk, and you have all kinds of other, and on Pesach you have with chametz and all kinds of things. Okay. If anyone eats the fat of the animal from which offerings by fire may be made to the Lord, the person eats it shall be cut off from his kin, and you must not consume any blood, either of bird or of animal, in any of your settlements. Anyone who eats blood shall be cut off from his kin. Mm-hmm. Really bad punishments for all these things. Okay, so it's number 5.
What did you say cut off, the difference between community and cut off from his kin?
Well, we're still saying it's all the same thing. If you'll notice, everything is
also different.
Ameha. No, so far they're all the same, except for the one about chamech.
Yeah.
Okay. Source number 5, also the same. When you sacrifice an offer of well-being to the Lord, sacrifices, so you need to accept it on your behalf. It should be eaten on that day or the next day. Anything left by the third day, you have to burn it. If it's eaten on the third day, it's a terrible thing. And if you eat of it on the third day, that person gets chamech.
On the third day.
Source number 6.
We don't know. What's wrong with it on the third day?
There are only so many tangents I can go off on. Giving class, I want to stay a little focused on the goal. Okay. Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, instruct Aaron and his sons to be scrupulous about the sacred donations the Jewish people consecrate to God. Throughout the ages, if any man among your offspring while in a state of uncleanness partakes of any sacred donation that the Israelite people may consecrate to the Lord, that person shall be cut off from before me. If a Kohen eats any kind of special food that's given to him, given to the Beit HaMikdash, and he's in a state that is not appropriate for him to eat from that, then he gets this terrible punishment of karet, of being cut off from his people, cut off from his community, and cut off from God, whatever that means, which we'll get to that in a minute, or a few. Okay, number 7. Lord spoke to Moses saying, mark the 10th day of the 7th month is the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur. Should be a sacred occasion for you. Practice self-denial. You shall bring an offering by fire to the Lord. Do no work during the whole day. It's the Day of Atonement. Any person who does not practice self-denial throughout the day shall be cut off from his kin. The 5 forbidden things on Yom Kippur. Eating, drinking, wearing leather shoes, smearing anything, and any sexual relations. All those 5 things, any person who engages in any of those 5 things on Yom Kippur, karet.
Bang.
What's number
8?
So that's what we have to describe also. That's one of the things that we're getting at. Where does the karet come from? So we suggested before, in the issue of a person who doesn't have a breast, it's possible, or again, if the person himself is doing any of these things intentionally, one could say that he himself is imposing the karet on him if we would interpret karet as being social
ostracization.
Okay.
Ostracism. Yes.
Okay,
right.
There you go. Okay, source number 8. We're also dealing with the mitzvah relating to Pesach. This is called Pesach Sheni.
Yeah.
In the situation of a person who couldn't make it, who left enough time and really everything planned in order to get to the Beit HaMikdash on time for Pesach, the real one, and couldn't make it for whatever reason. Let's say a person was in a state of impurity and he couldn't eat from his korban, he couldn't bring his korban, then you have a second chance. The Midrash tells us...
It's a day, right?
No, Pesach Sheni is a month later.
Oh, a month later.
A month later, same day of the month. It says here in Pasukim Aleph, mm-hmm. And the second month, instead of in the month of Nisan, the month of Iyar, the 14th day of the month of Iyar. A lot of people celebrate. A lot of people have a monopoly to eat matzah.
I thought it was just Shabbat.
Oh, they don't have a monopoly on this, though.
No, I mean on the
No, a lot of people it's a mitzvah mitzvah. A lot of people do it. The Midrash says a very interesting story, because the story here really, it comes out from a situation that occurs. The halacha, the mitzvah, appears because of a situation that the Midrash explains. People came to Moshe when they were in the Midbar and they said, we weren't able to bring the Pesach in Mitzrayim. We have a problem. Really, it's not fair. We want to bring this Korban Pesach. Mm-hmm. And so Moshe says, you have a good point. And he confers with God and I don't think they come up with this idea per se, But it was in there that this is the opportune time, the appropriate time to present this halakha. The halakha says that if you miss it the first time around, that you, for good reason, you have opportunity to do it the second time around. What was the good reason? And the judge says they were carrying the bones of Yosef.
Oh.
So they had to get the bones of Yosef that day from Mitzrayim to carry it with him. But by the time the next month came around, they had been camping for long enough in one spot. I didn't say it. It's the Midrash. They were camping for long enough that they were able to become, to go through the purification process, which we'll get to in source number 10. Okay, source number 9. This is where the intention comes in. And in source number 8, one could assume also that the intention is involved there, because if a person missed it the first time around, and the second time around doesn't, seems in Pasuk Yud Gemal, number 13, if a man who's clean and not on a journey refrains from offering the Passover sacrifice, which means that there has to be some kind of intention you could have. Everything was in place that you could have brought the Korban Pesach, and you don't, that person shall be cut off from his kin. So already now we're introducing this concept of intentional transgression. Source number 9. In cases of an individual who has sinned unwittingly, he shall offer a sea-goat in his first year as a sin offering. The term in Hebrew is bishgaga, by mistake or unwittingly. There are two examples of this with Shabbos. The example we're going to deal with is turning off the light in the bathroom. Okay? There are two reasons why one would turn off the light in the bathroom, a person who has committed to halacha and trying to keep Shabbos. Either you forgot it was Shabbos, and therefore it turned off the light, or you forgot that it's forbidden to turn off the light on Shabbos. You remembered it was Shabbos, but you forgot that that's one of the forbidden things on Shabbos. Only because of that example that I gave.
Uh-huh.
Okay, there are other examples that could be given, but it could happen also, with somebody who's new or with a different area of Hilchos Shabbos, that a person could forget, having just learned, there are many next door, lots of people, and myself included, who every week learn new halachas about Shabbos, things that you can and cannot do. And, oh, I forgot that that's not something that I'm supposed to do on Shabbos. I know Shabbos, I forgot it's something I'm not supposed to do.
Or it's habit.
Yes.
When you walk out of that, you don't think about
that's Shabbos. Forgetting that it's Shabbos.
Oh,
because
okay.
Had you realized that it was Shabbos, had you consciously realized, you would break your habit, because that's what Shabbos is all about, is about breaking your habit. Okay, so, but this person has opportunity to do tshuva, and you bring a korban, a special korban. The priest shall make expiation before the Lord on behalf of the person who erred, meaning he gets him forgiven. For the citizen among the Israelites and for the stranger who resides among them, he shall have one ritual for anyone who acts in error. But the person, be he citizen or stranger, who acts defiantly, reviles the Lord, that person shall be cut off among his people. From among his people. If you notice here before, if you're looking at the Hebrew, whereas in situations before it said, B'nechotah nefeshahi me'ameha, from her nation, here it says, Mikerev ameh. From among its people, and that difference is reflected in the translation.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I'm very impressed with this translation overall. I've mentioned it before, it's called the New JPS translation. It's a one volume.
Mm-hmm.
It's called what?
No,
I didn't bring it with me. It's a one volume called Tanakh, T-A-N-A-K-H, and they spent many, many years with many Bible scholars to come up with this translation. It reads like a story.
You took this from your computer?
No, I scanned it in. And
oh, you scanned it. Wow.
Yeah. This is from that Tanakh with a K?
Yes, K-H at the end. Okay. Which is actually, K-H is really a chet. No, K-H is the chaf, yeah. Okay.
Is it like a turquoise blue book?
Yes.
Oh, I have it.
Okay, good. All right. Source number 10. Anyone who touches the corpse of a human being shall be unclean for 7 days. If anyone is interested, this is the beginning of Parashat Chukat, talking about the Parah Aduma, the red heifer. There's a fantastic, fabulous, amazing class online. You can read it by Menachem Liebtag on Tanakh.org. Excellent. That's what I teach on Parshat Chukat. That's how I teach Parshat Chukat. I teach it through his eyes, from his perspective. It's fantastic. Yes, and he teaches at a number of different schools. So here we have the situation in which a person comes in contact with or is within the tent of someone who died. So if he touches the corpse of any human being, he should be unclean for 7 days. He shall cleanse himself with it on the third day and on the seventh day, and then be clean, it being a whole mixture from a burnt red heifer. If he fails to cleanse himself on the third and seventh days, he shall not be clean. Whoever touches the corpse, the body of a person who has died, and does not cleanse himself, defiles the Lord's tabernacle, that person shall be cut off from Israel. skipping down, we're dealing with the similar ritual also. With this person, now, we won't skip down. 14. This is the ritual. When a person dies in a tent, whoever enters the tent and whoever is in the tent shall be unclean 7 days. This is why a Kohen is not allowed to become a Lamech. A Kohen can't become impure, but can't touch a dead person, except a very, very close relative. Now, here we're talking about a person who walks into a tent in which there is a dead person lying. That person has a degree of uncleanliness also. I hate that word, uncleanliness. I'm going to use the Hebrew term of tumah, which is loosely translated as impurity, but it doesn't mean unclean. Mm. It means you have a technical status of the opposite of life. This is like, I have a whole thing on tumah and tahara. Tahara, purity, is really the ultimate connection to light, because a pure person has this ultimate connection with God. And impurity means that one has had contact with death. That's simply what it means, and there needs to be a waiting period, a separation period, before you can then have contact with the ultimate life and source of life, being God. So you have this. So when a person walks into a tent, whoever enters the tent, and whoever is in the tent when that person dies, should be unclean for 7 days. This is why Kohanim have issues with going into hospitals, because if there's a dead person in the hospital, then that whole building is considered an ohel, a tent, and then the Kohen, when he walks in, if there's a dead person in the hospital at any given time, could then become tameh. There are hospitals in Israel that actually have signs outside informing the Kohen if it is safe to enter or not.
Oh, really?
So, or they'll have separate rooms and stuff like that. Only in Israel. I mean, okay. Every open vessel with no lid fashioned down shall be unclean, and in the open, anyone who touches a person who was killed or who died naturally, or human bone, or a grave, shall be unclean 7 days. This is why when we leave a cemetery, we wash our hands until I die, and it's like a symbolic kind of purification, when really we should be waiting 7 days and going through the whole process. Mm-hmm. But we can't go through it because we don't have a red heifer, we don't have a Beit HaMikdash, we don't have
The mikvah
for what purpose?
Cleansing yourself.
For cleansing, for a woman cleansing herself?
No, for the tameh.
So it depends on certain kinds of tameh. The mikvah is not sufficient. And this for a tameh lameh, for a person who is impure by touching a dead person, the mikvah is not sufficient. He has to instead go through this whole process. He and his clothing has to go through a whole purification process in which he's sprinkled with a red heifer. Yeah.
What does a person do today who touches, who does a tahara?
Washes. I don't know if he might go through the mikvah before also.
Or even
and
a
after.
Woman. A woman does a woman, right?
Right. So I don't know exactly what the process is. Yehuda Teitelbaum is two rooms down. We can ask him about what the process is. For sure they wash the Tirat Yadayim afterwards. But really, if I would imagine, the mikvah doesn't even play a part here.
Right.
In this whole thing, maybe they would go before to sort of, you know, to be pure before you do this. I don't know, I'm making that
it's
up.
It's not a requirement.
But the mikvah, it doesn't play part at all in a person reversing the process.
Yeah. Why wet the cemetery when you wash? Do you only dry your hands on the brick? You never use a towel?
I don't know, I use a towel.
You do?
See, all my life they said,
but I
don't
never
touch the towel, you've got to touch the brick.
I use a paper towel.
Probably
because you're, I'll tell you why, because you're, there's a concept of now when you pour the water on your hand, that water has the status that your hand has. So it has a concept of tumah. So you don't want to transfer that tumah onto the towel.
Oh my God.
So if you transfer it onto the brick, the brick cannot be makabel tumah, cannot accept tumah.
But it's okay.
So, clothing can. Here, I'm going to pause this for a minute. Okay, we'll just move past that. Okay, this is the ritual. When a person dies in the tent, whoever enters the tent and whoever is in the tent shall be unclean 7 days. Every open vessel with no lid fashioned down shall be unclean. And in the open, anyone who touches a person who was killed, who died naturally, or human bone or grave shall be unclean 7 days. We did that already. Some of the ashes from the fire of cleansing shall be taken for the unclean person, and fresh water shall be added to them in a vessel. The person who is clean shall take hyssop, dip it in the water, spring, in other words, a tahor person, takes the hyssop, it's a plant, dip it in the water, sprinkle it on the tent and on all the vessels and people who are there, or on him who touched the bones of the person who was killed and died naturally or in the grave. The clean person, meaning the tahor person, sprinkles it upon the tameh person on the third day and on the seventh day, thus cleansing him by the seventh day. He shall then wash his clothes and bathe in water, and at nightfall he shall be clean. If anyone who has become unclean fails to cleanse himself, that person shall be cut off from the congregation, for he is defiled of the Lord's sanctuary. The water of lustration was not cast on him, he is unclean. This shall be the law for all time. Further, he who sprinkled the water of lustration shall wash his clothes, and whoever touches the water of lustration shall be unclean until evening. Whatever that unclean person touches shall be unclean, and the person who touches him shall be unclean until evening. So this is what they always say is the huge conundrum about the Parah Adumah, that the pure person, the tahor person, who sprinkled the water on the tameh person until evening is now in a state of tumah. So that's, you know, the ultimate conundrum. But he explains it, Rabbi Lietag explains it in this fantastic, really, really clear, good way. Okay, so now, based on these sources, what conclusion could you make about the nature of karig, which Rambam called the worst punishment of all in source number 11? That's what we did last week. Source number 11 we did last week. It's the 11th of the principles, Hayyishot HaAchadashar. Excuse me. Thank you. In your book, it's on page 83. Hayyishot HaAchadashar, the 11th principle, Shehu Yitzala No King Shachar L'Misha Mekayim Shiviyei HaTorah, that God gives reward to whoever keeps the commandments of the Torah. The Onesh L'Misha Ovir Al Azar Otaha, and punishment to whoever transgresses the warnings in the Torah. V'shash Charo Hayoter Gadol Hu Alam Haba, the greatest reward is Olam Haba, which we said is a spiritual state of being, not an actual physical location. And the greatest punishment of all is Karet. So now that we look through 10 sources in the Torah describing situations in which a person receives Karet, and understanding that Rambam sees it as the ultimate punishment, is it merely social ostracization? And what does it mean to be ostracized from God?
It says here, the greatest possible reward is the world to come, while the greatest possible punishment is being cut out from it.
Cut out from it. So already Aryeh Kaplan, in this translation, is giving us an interpretation of what Karet is all about. He says if the greatest reward is the ultimate intellectual connection, spiritual connection with God, that you have perfected and worked on your intellect and your spirituality and your neshama and your metaphysical, not your non-physical parts of your body, and work to connect it to the source of all spirituality, if that's what Olam Haba is, then it must be that Karet is the opposite of it. So who is going to receive this karet, this cutting off from the source of all spirituality? Only one who himself did not develop the connection. If you didn't plug in the plug, you can't get the electricity. You just can't. So these are examples. And we could go back through and look at these are basics that we're talking about here. Circumcision, Chametz on Pesach, Shabbos, the laws of purity with a dead person. I mean, these are, especially that one, that's the best example, God being the source of all life. If you intentionally cut yourself off from the source of all life, then you will not be able to enjoy and appreciate the ever after. So what happens to that neshama? So I want to tell you something interesting, just a different take. Rashi, on the first of our examples, talks about the nechotah nefesh. He said, what happens with the person who doesn't have a bris? He says, that person has no children and dies before his time. So for him, the way Rashi seems to present it, and he's quoting the Gemara in Shabbos, he seems to present this concept of Karet also having a physical outcome. We spoke about in terms of Rambam having only the spiritual, it's only in the hereafter. But according to the way Rashi presents it, it means also the blip that you were on the screen has now disappeared. You have no further impact on the rest of the world. Because if you have no children, and if you die before your time, then that whatever that means, I cannot even begin to go there. I'm not even talking about the horribleness. What does it mean to die before one's time?
Mm.
I don't know what that means. I don't know what anybody's time is. But dying young is not always a punishment. Yeah. Also, I think, personally.
Well, if somebody's sick, but by a person who's...
Exactly.
A person who gets hit by a car and dies.
Exactly. Young children, young babies who get...
People that are killed in a war.
Yes. Though I'm not sure that that's... You know, I mean, I'm not God, so I can't you can't make the assumption backwards. You can't say this person died before their time and died childless, therefore that must be that that person got carried, and let's go examine what that person did and see why that person... So you can't do that, because only God makes his calculations. We can't... That's really what this whole class is about all last year and all this year, is that we can try to understand God as much as we can, and we really should try to understand it, but at the end of the day, we cannot even come close to understanding the minutiae that goes into his calculation.
Well, that in itself is a madriga.
Yes. There you go. Okay, let's look at source number 12. Is the end of, if you remember last week, we did a whole long paragraph where he describes the world to come, where he describes Olam Haba, the ultimate spiritual connection. Source 13 is translated. Okay, but choice number 12. After he spoke about the ultimate good, being Olam Haba, being this deep spiritual connection, he now talks about in number 12, the Hara'ah HaShleimahi, the most complete evil, Hikartut ha-nefesh va'avjana, the cutting off of the soul and its loss. V'shelo tishkeh lihishaer kayemet, the soul does not stay forever then. V'hu ha-karet ha-nishkar ba-Torah. This is what karet is when it's talked about in the Torah. It means that every soul, which we spoke about before, every soul can live on in eternity. The soul of the person who commits these transgressions willingly and purposefully ceases to exist. The strings are cut. That's it. That's what it means to be ostracized from God. God removes his connection with this person. That could be why Rashi explains it, saying that the person dies early. God severs all connections with this person, both spiritual and physical and actual. The soul disappears.
There's an awful lot of people that are disconnected.
More room for us.
There you go.
It's not funny. It's very sad.
No, I was laughing at the assumption that us were going there.
Okay, turn to the next page, please, for source number 13, which I guess put on the next page for, in the interest of space. Okay, here we have our English translation from that wonderful website that I spoke about last week. Okay, b'sha'asha shoklim avonot adam in zuchuyotav, when one's transgressions are evaluated, ein mechashvim alav avon shechatabo tchila velo sheni. If they're not calculated, they don't count the first and the second sin that a person did. Rather, we start with a third time. In other words, the first two times a person transgresses something, it's okay, it's a slip. It's a trip, you know. How was your trip? I'll tell you next fall, but we hope you don't get to the fall. In starting from the third sin, or the third time one sins, and onward, if their sins are greater than their mitzvot, otam shnei avonot mitztarfim v'danim otam al hakol. Then the first two are retroactively included, and they tip the scales. The imen she'uzachu yotav keneged avonotav, asher mei avon shlishi va'elach. And if we find that the if the number of the mitzvot are equal to the punishment, to the sins that from the third sin and on, ma'avirim kol avonatav rishon. He says, then the number of one's merits and the number of one's transgressions when counted from one's third transgressions are equal, then one's transgressions are recounted from the fourth one And the fifth one, here's what you do. The fourth one, if you start from the third time, okay, if you're starting from the third time, you did more mitzvot than averot, then the third time becomes the first time and doesn't count again.
But
and then the fourth one becomes the first one and it doesn't count again.
Hmm. This is from Rambam.
Well, he's probably quoting somebody else. Oh. But yeah.
But repeat that again.
Okay.
Yeah. I thought that I could.
Here's what we. Okay. I did more mitzvot than averot. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then, starting again, we're starting from the third Avera, not from the first Avera, because the first two don't count. The first two only count if starting from the third one you have more Averas than Mitzvahs. If starting from the third one you have more Mitzvahs than Averas, then the third one becomes the first one again, because the first two don't count. The first one. The fourth one becomes the second one. Mm-hmm. The fifth one becomes the third one. Mm-hmm. So you start counting from the fifth one now. Mm-hmm. And the third and the fourth get thrown out the window because they were the first and second, and they don't count anymore.
But this can go on and on.
That's exactly what happens. It goes on and on, which means if your mitzvahs are more than your averos, the averos get thrown out the window. The averos aren't counted at all.
It means tshuva counts, right?
Yeah. And if you have more mitzvahs than averos,
right.
Because the third one is considered first, because the first two are already forgiven. Then the fourth one becomes the first, until it's finished. What are we talking about here? The yachid. Talking about an individual, not a nation. An individual person. So now my hain kol ela yifal el pa'amayim shalosh and gaber. And he quotes the passage from Eov. God does all these things twice or three times with a man about hatzibur, but with a nation, with a community, tolim lahem avon rishon sheni ushlishi. You count all of them. Shenamai, as it says in Amos, al shlosha pishe shuel v'al arba'a lo ashivenu. B'nai shall sin three times, and on the fourth one already I'm not going to count from the fourth one onward. Okay. Ukshe mechashvim lahem al darach zeh, mechashvim lahem merivi'i v'eilach. And then when he calculates from a community, they're counting from the fourth and further on. Ha'beinonim em haya b'chal mechetsa avonot shalahem. Those who are in the middle, someone who has the same number of mitzvot and avirot, if his transgression, so im haya bechla machatcha avonot shalahem, if some of his transgressions included shelo hiniach tefillin me'olam, that he never put on tefillin, shenima tokefi cheto, we judge him according to his sins, but yesh lo chelek be'olam haba. So if some of his sins include a person who never put on tefillin before, a person, now we're talking about a person who is equal numbers of mitzvot and averot. So that person, if he never put on tefillin before, he gets punished for his sins that he did, but he still gets a chelek in olam haba. Mm-hmm. He still gets a part in the world.
I never put on tefillin.
A person who could put on tefillin.
The pious goyim.
Wait a minute.
That's
the chen kol ha-risha'im she'avonoteihem merubim, and all of the risha'im, all of the evil people who have more, I see he didn't, okay, I don't know if he translated everything here. The evil people who have more, Shabonotehem Rubim, who have more sins, you judge them by their sins, evil Jewish people still have a portion in the world to come, even if a person sins, we still have a place in the world to come, of course within limits. And righteous Gentiles, Yeshua Khalam Haba, they also have a portion in the world to come. Vav, number six. The Elohim Sha'im Khalam Haba. What's the breaking point? What's considered somebody who sinned but doesn't get a portion in the world to come? Ella Nichlatim Vaovdim Vinidonim. Rather they are cut off, they are lost. And they are, he says, excommunicated. Al gojel risham, for the gravity of their evilness, the chataam, and their sins, lo olam ole olamim, forever and ever and ever. Who are they? Taminim. And he describes who the minim are later on. a mean as a person is, and you can look in your, if you look at the very end of each of the principles in your R.E. Kaplan reader, you'll see that he lists people who don't get a portion in the world to come, according to the Rambam. He may include people who don't believe that there is one God, who don't believe this about God, etc., etc. He gives very specific definitions. Papi Korsen also gives specific definitions. Ha'kofrim b'Torah, someone who denies the Torah. Ha'kofrim t'chiyat ha'mitim, someone who denies the resurrection of the dead. U'b'viyat ha'goel, and with the coming of Mashiach. Ha'mumarim, those who convert from Judaism. U'machti'ei ha'rabim, and cause great amounts of people to sin. You know, I have to tell you this experience I had this week. Oh gosh, we have 4 minutes left and there's no way I'm going to finish. Okay, so we'll do 14 at home if you're interested by yourself and talking about Kari. We got the main point. Yeshiva University started a new, I'm going to finish this also. Yeshiva University started a new group called the Center for the Jewish Future. Mm. They've done away sort of with their...
Kenny Brandon?
Yeah, so they've done away with their... The Center for the Jewish Future. So done away with their rabbinics department. This is like their new rabbi and educator and community liaisons. And this is the one you go to, you know, for whatever, for guidance. As a rabbi, as a community leader, whatever. So they have... It's called the Center for the Jewish Future. So I figure... their Center for the Jewish Future, they call it... I put in www.cjf.org.
Center for Jewish People?
Center for the Jewish Future. So I get something about some Jewish missionary that, okay, it says on it, you have to see the whole website, it says on it the Hebrew date, it says like the times for gathering, it says on it all the Yom Kippurim. I went on it, I knew that it wasn't the Center for the Jewish Future, that it was something else. So I was curious, though, what stream of Judaism exactly am I on? And I go to their About page, and I see that their leader says, in the year 1947, God spoke to a Jewish teenager and told him to spread the truth of Jesus to the Jewish people. I'm reading this. Now, you have to understand, before, a man came to our school named Rabbi Mechanic. Rabbi Mechanic spends his life going to Jewish high schools. He used to do it for adults. Now he does it for Jewish high schools.
Yeah, he's very good.
So he came and he gave a whole talk about how Judaism is the only religion that says that there was a divine revelation to a nation, not just one person. He said, how can you believe a religion in which there was a divine revelation to one person? How can you believe that one person? Maybe the guy forgot to take his medicine that day. And here I am. Those were his words. Yeah. He's a very funny guy. Looking at this website a week later, and it says, in 1947, God appeared to a Jewish teenager and told him to spread the truth of Jesus. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh. Here we have somebody who left Judaism and is convincing other people to do the same.
This is what's on their website. What was the real website? Center for something.
Oh, what was the one that I went to? I don't know. Anybody who separates from communal ways, they don't get a place in Olam Haba. And these person, and the term that he uses for someone who doesn't have Olam Haba, the opposite of having Olam Haba, is nichretim. Someone who has karet. Karet is the opposite of Olam Haba. And here you see an example, it's using the same words of karet to be cut off. That here you have this concept, like we said, like we started with, we're ending with the concept that we started with, that we're dealing with someone who has cut himself really off of the community, who has purposely and intentionally gone against the word of God. Mm-hmm. Therefore, God says, what do I need to extend myself to you anymore? Let me focus on the other people who want to have a relationship with me. Someone who does... they wrote very publicly and defiantly, like Yehoyakim, the Hamoshrim, anybody who turns over Jewish people to a non-Jewish government, Umatile Ema Al Hatzibor Shalom L'Shem Shemayim, someone who instills fear upon the congregation, not for the sake of God, the Shofchei Damim, those who kill, Uba'alei Lashon Har. It doesn't say people who speak Lashon Har. People who are Ba'alei. The translation says relate to Lashon Hara, but a Ba'al Lashon Hara is a person who that's what they're all about.
Gossip mongers.
Yes.
Yeah.
what's her name, who writes, you know, those gossip columnists and the whatever. The Hamosheikh, and what, look at the last example. We have to end with the last example. Hamosheikh or Lato, one who pulls back his foreskin in order to cover his brit milah. That's the example we began with. But the person who doesn't keep a brit, this is a person, and Rambam says, what we're dealing with here is a person who knows he's Jewish, who knows what he's supposed to do, and who defiantly doesn't do it. So God says, again, I'm going to use the electricity example, if you don't plug into me, I can't give you that electricity. I can't give you that spirituality and that life. Mm-hmm. So on that negative note, next week we will hopefully talk about Mashiach.
This was excellent.
Excellent. Thank you.
You were to the kids.